Chapter 83, Draupadi Meets the Queens of Krishna. Shukadev Goswami said, "Thus Lord Krishna, the spiritual master of the gopis and the very purpose of their life, showed them his mercy. He then met with Yudhisthira and all his other relatives and inquired from them about their welfare. Feeling greatly honored, King Yudhisthira and the others, freed of all sinful reactions by seeing the feet of the Lord of the universe, gladly answered his inquiries. Lord Krishna's relatives said, 'O Master, how can misfortune arise for those who have even once freely drunk the nectar coming from your lotus feet? This intoxicating liquor pours into the drinking cups of their ears, having flowed from the minds of great devotees through their mouths. It destroys the embodied soul's forgetfulness of the creator of their bodily existence. The radiance of your personal form dispels the threefold effects of material consciousness, and by your grace we become immersed in total happiness. Your knowledge is indivisible and unrestricted. By your yogamaya potency you have assumed this human form for protecting the Vedas, which had been threatened by time. We bow down to you, the final destination of perfect saints.'" Shukadev Goswami said, "As Yudhisthira and the others were thus praising Lord Krishna, the crest jewel of all sublimely glorified personalities, the women of the Andaka and Kaurava clans met with one another and began discussing topics about Govinda that are sung throughout the three worlds. Please listen as I relate these to you." Sri Draupadi said, "O Vaidarbhi, Bhadra and Jambavati, O Kaushala, Satyabhama and Kalindi, O Shaivya, Rohini, Lakshmana and other wives of Lord Krishna, please tell me how the Supreme Lord Achyuta, imitating the ways of this world by his mystic power, came to marry each of you." Sri Rukmini said, "When all the kings held their bows at the ready to assure that I would be presented to Shishupal, he who puts the dust of his feet on the heads of invincible warriors took me from their midst, as a lion forcibly takes his prey from the midst of goats and sheep. May I always be allowed to worship those feet of Lord Krishna, the abode of Goddess Sri." Sri Satyabhama said, "My father, his heart tormented by my brother's murder, blamed Lord Krishna for the crime. To remove the stain on his reputation, the Lord defeated the king of the bears and took back the Syamantaka jewel, which he then returned to my father. Fearing the consequences of his offense, my father offered me to the Lord, even though I had already been promised to others." Sri Jambavati said, "Unaware that Lord Krishna was none other than his own master and worshipable deity, the husband of Goddess Sita, my father fought with him for 27 days. When my father finally came to his senses and recognized the Lord, he took hold of his feet and presented him with both me and the Simantaka jewel as tokens of his reverence. I am simply the Lord's maidservant." Sri Kalindi said, "The Lord knew I was performing severe austerities and penances with the hope of one day touching his lotus feet. So he came to me in the company of his friend and took my hand in marriage. Now I am engaged as a sweeper in his palace." Sri Mitravinda said, "At my Swayamvara ceremony, he came forward, defeated all the kings present, including my brothers who dared insult him, and took me away just as a lion removes his prey from amidst a pack of dogs. Thus Lord Krishna, the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune, brought me to his capital city. May I be allowed to serve him by washing his feet, life after life." Sri Satya said, "My father arranged for 7 extremely powerful and vigorous bulls with deadly sharp horns to test the prowess of the kings who desired my hand in marriage. Although these bulls destroyed the false pride of many heroes, Lord Krishna subdued them effortlessly, tying them up in the same way that children playfully tie up a goat's kids. He thus purchased me with his valor. Then he took me away with my maidservants and a full army of 4 divisions, defeating all the kings who opposed him along the road. May I be granted the privilege of serving that Lord." Sri Bhadra said, "My dear Draupadi, of his own free will my father invited his nephew Krishna, to whom I had already dedicated my heart, and offered me to him as his bride. My father presented me to the Lord with an Akshauhini military guard and a retinue of my female companions. My ultimate perfection is this, to always be allowed to touch Lord Krishna's lotus feet as I wander from life to life, bound by my karma." Sri Lakshmana said, O Queen, I repeatedly heard Narada Muni glorify the appearances and activities of Achyuta, and thus my heart also became attached to that Lord, Mukunda. Indeed, even the Goddess of Fortune chose him as her husband after careful consideration, rejecting the great demigods who rule various planets. My father, Brihatsen, was by nature compassionate to his daughter, and knowing how I felt, O saintly lady, he arranged to fulfill my desire. Just as a fish was used as a target in your Swayamvara ceremony to assure that you would obtain Arjun as your husband, so a fish was also used in my ceremony. In my case, however, it was concealed on all sides, and only its reflection could be seen in a pot of water below. Hearing of this, thousands of kings expert in shooting arrows and in wielding other weapons converged from all directions on my father's city, accompanied by their military teachers. My father properly honored each king according to his strength and seniority. Then those whose minds were fixed on me took up the bow and arrow and one by one tried to pierce the target in the midst of the assembly. Some of them picked up the bow but could not string it, and so they threw it aside in frustration. Some managed to pull the bowstring toward the tip of the bow, only to have the bow spring back and knock them to the ground. A few heroes, namely Durasan, Shishupal, Bhima, Duryodhana, Karna, and the king of Ambasta, succeeded in stringing the bow, but none of them could find the target. Then Arjun looked at the reflection of the fish in the water and determined its position. When he carefully shot his arrow at it, however, he did not pierce the target, but merely grazed it. After all the arrogant kings had given up, their pride broken, the Supreme Personality of Godhead picked up the bow, easily strung it, and then fixed his arrow upon it. As the sun stood in the constellation Abhijit, he looked at the fish in the water only once, and then pierced it with the arrow, knocking it to the ground. Kettledrums resounded in the sky, and on the earth people shouted, Jai! Jai! Overjoyed, demigods showered flowers. Just then I walked onto the ceremonial ground, the ankle bells on my feet gently tinkling. I was wearing new garments of the finest silk tied with a belt, and I carried a brilliant necklace fashioned of gold and jewels. There was a shy smile on my face and a wreath of flowers in my hair. I lifted my face, which was encircled by my abundant locks and effulgent from the glow of my earrings reflected from my cheeks. Smiling coolly, I glanced about. Then, looking around at all the kings, I slowly placed the necklace on the shoulder of Murari, who had captured my heart. Just then there were loud sounds of conch shells and mridanga, pataha, beri, and anaka drums, as well as other instruments. Men and women began to dance, and singers began to sing. The leading kings there could not tolerate my having chosen the Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Draupadi. Burning with lust, they became quarrelsome. The Lord then placed me on his chariot, drawn by four most excellent horses. Donning his armor and readying his bow shanga, he stood on the chariot, and there on the battleground he manifested his four arms. Daruka drove the Lord's gold-trimmed chariot as the kings looked on, O Queen, like small animals helplessly watching a lion. The kings pursued the Lord like village dogs chasing a lion. Some kings, raising their bows, stationed themselves on the road to stop him as he passed by. These warriors were deluged by arrows shot from the Lord's bow, Shanga. Some of the kings fell on the battlefield with severed arms, legs, and necks. The rest gave up the fight and fled. The Lord of the Yadus then entered his capital city, Dwaraka, which is glorified in heaven and on earth. The city was elaborately decorated with flagpoles carrying banners that blocked the sun, and also with splendid archways. As Lord Krishna entered, he appeared like the sun god entering his abode. My father honored his friends, family, and in-laws with priceless clothing and jewelry, and with royal beds, thrones, and other furnishings. With devotion, he presented the perfectly complete Lord with a number of maidservants bedecked with precious ornaments. Accompanying these maidservants were guards walking on foot and others riding elephants, chariots, and horses. He also gave the Lord extremely valuable weapons. Thus, by renouncing all material association and practicing austere penances, we queens have all become personal maidservants of the self-satisfied Supreme Lord. Rohini Devi, speaking for the other queens, said, After killing Bulmasura and his followers, the Lord found us in the demon's prison and could understand that we were the daughters of the kings whom Bulma had defeated during his conquest of the earth. The Lord set us free, and because we have been constantly meditating upon his lotus feet, the source of liberation from material entanglement, he agreed to marry us, though his every desire is already fulfilled. O saintly lady, we do not desire dominion over the earth, the sovereignty of the King of Heaven, unlimited facility for enjoyment, mystic power, the position of Lord Brahma, immortality, or even attainment of the Kingdom of God. We simply desire to carry on our heads the glorious dust of Lord Krishna's feet, enriched by the fragrance of kumkum from his consort's bosom. We desire the same contact with the Supreme Lord's feet that the young women of Braja, the coward boys, and even the aborigine Pulinda women desire, the touch of the dust he leaves on the plants and grass as he tends his cows. Chapter 84, The Sage's Teachings at Kurukshetra. Shukadev Goswami said, Prita, Gandhari, Draupadi, Subhadra, the wives of other kings and the Lord's cowherd girlfriends were all amazed to hear of the Queen's deep love for Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Soul of all beings, and their eyes filled with tears. As the women thus talked among themselves and the men among themselves, a number of great sages arrived there, all of them eager to see Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. They included Vaipayana, Narada, Shravana, Devala and Asita, Vishvamitra, Shatananda, Bharadvaj and Gautama, Lord Parashuram and his disciples, Vasishta, Galava, Vrigu, Pulastya and Kashyapa, Atri, Markandeya and Brihaspati, Dvita, Trita, Ekata and the four Kumaras, and Angira, Agastya, Yajnavalkya and Vamadev. As soon as they saw the sages approaching, the kings and other gentlemen who had been seated immediately stood up, including the Pandava brothers and Krishna and Balaram. They all then bowed down to the sages, who are honored throughout the universe. Lord Krishna, Lord Balaram, and the other kings and leaders properly worshipped the sages by offering them words of greeting, sitting places, water for washing their feet, drinking water, flower garlands, incense, and sandalwood paste. After the sages were comfortably seated, the Supreme Lord Krishna, whose transcendental body protects religious principles, addressed them in the midst of that great assembly. Everyone listened silently with rapt attention. The Supreme Lord said, Now our lives are indeed successful, for we have obtained life's ultimate goal, the audience of great yoga masters, which even demigods only rarely obtain. How is it that people who are not very austere and who recognize God only in his deity form in the temple can now see you, touch you, inquire from you, bow down to you, worship your feet, and serve you in other ways? Mere bodies of water are not the real sacred places of pilgrimage, nor are mere images of earth and stone the true worshipable deities. These purify one only after a long time, but saintly sages purify one immediately upon being seen. Neither the demigods controlling fire, the sun, the moon, and the stars, nor those in charge of earth, water, ether, air, speech, and mind, actually remove the sins of their worshippers, who continue to see in terms of dualities. But wise sages destroy one's sins when respectfully served for even a few moments. One who identifies his self as the inert body composed of mucus, bile, and air, who assumes his wife and family are permanently his own, who thinks an earthen image or the land of his birth is worshipable, or who sees a place of pilgrimage as merely the water there, but who never identifies himself with, feels kinship with, worships, or even visits those who are wise in spiritual truth, such a person is no better than a cow or an ass. Shukadev Goswami said, Hearing such unfathomable words from the unlimitedly wise Lord Krishna, the learned Brahmins remained silent, their minds bewildered. For some time the sages pondered the Supreme Lord's behavior, which resembled that of a subordinate living being. They concluded that he was acting this way to instruct the people in general. Thus they smiled and spoke to him, the spiritual master of the universe. The great sages said, Your power of illusion has totally bewildered us, the most exalted knowers of the truth and leaders among the universal creators. Ah, how amazing is the behavior of the Supreme Lord! He covers himself with his human-like activities and pretends to be subject to superior control. Indeed, the human-like pastimes of the Almighty are simply a pretense. Effortlessly, he alone sends forth from his self this variegated creation, maintains it, and then swallows it up again, all without becoming entangled, just as the element earth takes on many names and forms in its various transformations. Nonetheless, at suitable times you assume the pure mode of goodness to protect your devotees and punish the wicked. Thus you, the soul of the Varnashram social order, the supreme personality of Godhead, maintain the eternal path of the Vedas by enjoying your pleasure pastimes. The Vedas are your spotless heart, and through them one can perceive, by means of austerity, study, and self-control, the manifest, the unmanifest, and the pure existence transcendental to both. Therefore, O Supreme Brahman, you honor the members of the Brahminical community, for they are the perfect agents by which one can realize you through the evidence of the Vedas. For that very reason, you are the foremost worshipper of the Brahmins. Today our birth, education, austerity, and vision have all become perfect because we have been able to associate with you, the goal of all saintly persons. Indeed, you yourself are the ultimate supreme blessing. Let us offer our obeisances unto that supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the infinitely intelligent Supersoul, who has disguised his greatness through his mystic Yoga Maya. Neither these kings nor even the Vrishnis, who enjoy your intimate association, know you as the soul of all existence, the force of time, and the supreme controller. For them you are covered by the curtain of Maya. A sleeping person imagines an alternative reality for himself, and seeing himself as having various names and forms, he forgets his waking identity, which is distinct from the dream. Similarly, the senses of one whose consciousness is bewildered by illusion perceive only the names and forms of material objects. Thus, such a person loses his memory and cannot know you. Today we have directly seen your feet, the source of the holy Ganges, which washes away volumes of sins. Perfected yogis can at best meditate upon your feet within their hearts, but only those who render you wholehearted devotional service and in this way vanquish the soul's covering, the material mind, attain you as their final destination. Therefore, kindly show mercy to us, your devotees. Shukadev Goswami said, having thus spoken, O wise king, the sages then took leave of Lord Krishna, Dhritarashtra, and Yudhisthira, and prepared to depart for their ashrams. Seeing that they were about to leave, the renowned Vasudev approached the sages. After bowing down to them and touching their feet, he spoke to them with carefully chosen words. Sri Vasudev said, obeisances to you, the residents of all the demigods. Please hear me, O sages. Kindly tell us how the reactions of one's work can be counteracted by further work. Sri Narada Muni said, O Brahmins, it is not so amazing that in his eagerness to know, Vasudev has asked us about his ultimate benefit, for he considers Krishna a mere boy. In this world, familiarity breeds contempt. For example, one who lives on the banks of the Ganges might travel to some other body of water to be purified. The Supreme Lord's awareness is never disturbed by time, by the creation and destruction of the universe, by changes in its own qualities, or by anything else, whether self-caused or external. But although the consciousness of the personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme One without a second, is never affected by material distress, by the reactions of material work, or by the constant flow of nature's modes, ordinary persons nonetheless think that the Lord is covered by his own creations of prana and other material elements, just as one may think that the sun is covered by clouds, snow, or an eclipse. Shukadev Goswami continued, the sages then spoke again, O King, addressing Vasudev while all the kings, along with Lord Achyuta and Lord Ram, listened. The sages said, it has been definitely concluded that work is counteracted by further work when one executes Vedic sacrifices as a means of worshipping Vishnu, the Lord of all sacrifices, with sincere faith. Learned authorities who see through the eye of Scripture have demonstrated that this is the easiest method of subduing the agitated mind and attaining liberation. and that it is a sacred duty which brings joy to the heart. This is the most auspicious path for a religious householder of the twice-born orders, to selflessly worship the personality of Godhead with wealth honestly obtained. An intelligent person should learn to renounce his desire for wealth by performing sacrifices and acts of charity. He should learn to renounce his desire for a wife and children by experiencing family life. And he should learn to renounce his desire for promotion to a higher planet in his next life by studying the effects of time. Self-controlled sages who have thus renounced their attachment to household life go to the forest to perform austerities. Dear Vasudeva Prabhu, a member of the twice-born classes is born with three kinds of debts: those owed to the demigods, to the sages, and to his forefathers. If he leaves his body without first liquidating these debts by performing sacrifice, studying the scriptures, and begetting children, he will fall down into a hellish condition. But you, O magnanimous soul, are already free from two of your debts, those to the sages and the forefathers. Now absolve yourself of your debt to the demigods by executing Vedic sacrifices, and in this way free yourself completely of debt and renounce all material shelter. O Vasudeva, without doubt you must have previously worshipped Lord Hari, the master of all worlds. Both you and your wife must have perfectly worshipped him with supreme devotion, since he has accepted the role of your son. Shukadev Goswami said, after hearing these statements of the sages, generous Vasudeva bowed his head to the ground and, praising them, requested them to become his priests. Thus requested by him, the sages engaged the pious Vasudeva in performing fire sacrifices at that holy place of Kurukshetra, according to strict religious principles and with most excellent ritual arrangements. When Maharaj Vasudeva was about to be initiated for the sacrifice, the Vrishnis came to the initiation pavilion after bathing and putting on fine clothes and garlands of lotuses. The other kings also came, elaborately ornamented, as well as all their joyful queens, who wore jeweled lockets around their necks and were also clad in fine garments. The royal wives were anointed with sandalwood paste and carried auspicious items for the worship. Mridangas, patahas, conchels, berries, anikas, and other instruments resounded. Male and female dancers danced, and sutras and magadas recited glorifications. Sweet-voiced Gandharvis sang, accompanied by their husbands. After Vasudeva's eyes had been decorated with black cosmetic and his body smeared with fresh butter, the priests initiated him according to scriptural rules by sprinkling him and his 18 wives with sacred water. Encircled by his wives, he resembled the regal moon encircled by stars. Vasudeva received initiation along with his wives, who wore silk saris and were adorned with bangles, necklaces, ankle bells, and earrings. With his body wrapped in a deerskin, Vasudeva shone splendidly. Vasudeva's priests and the officiating members of the assembly, dressed in silk dhotis and jeweled ornaments, looked so effulgent that they seemed to be standing in the sacrificial arena of Indra, the killer of Vritra. At that time, Balaram and Krishna, the lords of all living entities, shone forth with great majesty in the company of their respective sons, wives, and other family members, who were expansions of their opulences. Performing various kinds of Vedic sacrifice according to the proper regulations, Vasudeva worshipped the Lord of all sacrificial paraphernalia, mantras, and rituals. He executed both primary and secondary sacrifices, offering oblations to the sacred fire and carrying out other aspects of sacrificial worship. Then, at the appropriate time and according to scripture, Vasudeva remunerated the priests by decorating them with precious ornaments, though they were already richly adorned, and offering them valuable gifts of cows, land, and marriageable girls. After supervising the Patni Sanyaja and Navavritya rituals, the great Brahmin sages bathed in Lord Parashuram's lake with the sponsor of the sacrifice, Vasudeva, who led them. His sacred bath complete, Vasudeva joined with his wives in giving the jewelry and clothes they had been wearing to the professional reciters. Vasudeva then put on new garments, after which he honored all classes of people by feeding everyone, even the dogs. With opulent gifts he honored his relatives, including all their wives and children. The royalty of the Vidarbha, Kosala, Kuru, Kashi, Kekaya, and Sundriya kingdoms, the officiating members of the assembly, and also the priests, witnessing demigods, humans, spirits, forefathers, and charanas. Then, taking permission from Lord Krishna, the shelter of the goddess of fortune, the various guests departed as they all chanted the glories of Vasudeva's sacrifice. The Yadus were all embraced by their friends, close family members, and other relatives, including Dhritarashtra and his younger brother, Vidura, Prita and her sons, Bhishma, Drona, the twins Nakula and Sahadev, Narada, and Vedavyas, the personality of Godhead. Their hearts melting with affection, these and the other guests left for their kingdoms, their progress slowed by the pain of separation. Nanda Maharaj showed his affection for his relatives, the Yadus, by remaining with them a little longer, together with his cowherds. During his stay, Krishna, Balaram, Ugrasen, and the others honored him with especially opulent worship. Having so easily crossed over the vast ocean of his ambition, Vasudeva felt fully satisfied. In the company of his many well-wishers, he took Nanda by the hand and addressed him as follows. My dear brother, God himself has tied the knot called affection, which tightly binds human beings together. It seems to me that even great heroes and mystics find it very difficult to free themselves from it. Indeed, the Supreme Lord must have created the bonds of affection, for such exalted saints as you have never stopped showing matchless friendship toward us ingrates, although it has never been properly reciprocated. Previously, dear brother, we did nothing to benefit you because we were unable to. Yet even now that you are present before us, our eyes are so blinded by the intoxication of material good fortune that we continue to ignore you. O most respectful one, may a person who wants the highest benefit in life never gain kingly opulence, for it leaves him blind to the needs of his own family and friends. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, his heart softened by feelings of intimate sympathy, Vasudev wept. His eyes brimmed with tears as he remembered the friendship Nanda had shown him. And on his part, Nanda was also full of affection for his friend Vasudev. Thus, during the following days, Nanda would repeatedly announce, I will be leaving later today, and I will be leaving tomorrow. But out of love for Krishna and Balaram, he remained there for 3 more months, honored by all the Yadus. Then, after Vasudev, Ugrasen, Krishna, Uddhava, Balaram, and others had fulfilled his desires and presented him with precious ornaments, fine linen, and varieties of priceless household furnishings, Nanda Maharaj accepted all these gifts and took his leave. Seen off by all the Yadus, he departed with his family members and the residents of Braja. Unable to withdraw their minds from Lord Govinda's lotus feet, where they had surrendered them, Nanda and the cowherd men and women returned to Mathura. Their relatives having thus departed, and seeing that the rainy season was approaching, the Vrishnis, whose only lord was Krishna, went back to Dwaraka. They told the people of the city about the festive sacrifices performed by Vasudev, lord of the Yadus, and about everything else that had happened during their pilgrimage, especially how they had met with all their loved ones. Chapter 85, Lord Krishna instructs Vasudev and retrieves Devaki's dead sons. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, one day the 2 sons of Vasudev, Krishna and Balaram, came to pay him respects, bowing down at his feet. Vasudev greeted them with great affection and spoke to them. Having heard the great sage's words concerning the power of his 2 sons, and having seen their valorous deeds, Vasudev became convinced of their divinity. Thus, addressing them by name, he spoke to them as follows. O Krishna, Krishna, best of yogis, O eternal Sankarsham, I know that you too are personally the source of universal creation and the ingredients of creation as well. You are the supreme personality of Godhead, who manifests as the Lord of both nature and the creator of nature, Mahavishnu. Everything that comes into existence, however and whenever it does so, is created within you, by you, from you, for you, and in relation to you. O Transcendental Lord, from yourself you created this entire variegated universe, and then you entered within it in your personal form as the Supersoul. In this way, O unborn Supreme Soul, as the life force and consciousness of everyone, you maintain the creation. Whatever potencies the life air and other elements of universal creation exhibit are actually all personal energies of the Supreme Lord, For both life and matter are subordinate to him and dependent on him, and also different from one another. Thus everything active in the material world is set into motion by the Supreme Lord. The glow of the moon, the brilliance of fire, the radiance of the sun, the twinkling of the stars, the flash of lightning, the permanence of mountains, and the aroma and sustaining power of the earth, all these are actually you. My Lord, you are water, and also its taste and its capacities to quench thirst and sustain life. You exhibit your potencies through the manifestations of the air as bodily warmth, vitality, mental power, physical strength, endeavor, and movement. You are the directions and their accommodating capacity, the all-pervading ether and the elemental sound residing within it. You are the primeval, unmanifested form of sound, the first syllable, Om, and audible speech by which sound, as words, acquires particular references. You are the power of the senses to reveal their objects, the senses presiding demigods, and the sanction these demigods give for sensory activity. You are the capacity of the intelligence for decision-making, and the living being's ability to remember things accurately. You are false ego in the mode of ignorance, which is the source of the physical elements, false ego in the mode of passion, which is the source of the bodily senses, false ego in the mode of goodness, which is the source of the demigods, and the unmanifest total material energy, which underlies everything. You are the one indestructible entity among all the destructible things of this world, like the underlying substance that is seen to remain unchanged while the things made from it undergo transformations. The modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, together with all their functions, become directly manifest within you, the Supreme Absolute Truth, by the arrangement of your Yoga Maya. Thus, these created entities, transformations of material nature, do not exist except when material nature manifests them within you, at which time you also manifest within them. But aside from such periods of creation, you stand alone as the transcendental reality. They are truly ignorant who, while imprisoned within the ceaseless flow of this world's material qualities, fail to know you, the supreme soul of all that be, as their ultimate sublime destination. Because of their ignorance, the entanglement of material work forces such souls to wander in the cycle of birth and death. By good fortune, a soul may obtain a healthy human life, an opportunity rarely achieved. But if he is nonetheless deluded about what is best for him, O Lord, your illusory Maya will cause him to waste his entire life. You keep this whole world bound up by the ropes of affection, and thus when people consider their material bodies, they think, "This is me." And when they consider their progeny and other relations, they think, "These are mine." You are not our sons, but the very lords of both material nature and its creator, Mahavishnu. As you yourself have told us, you have descended to rid the earth of the rulers who are a heavy burden upon her. Therefore, O friend of the distressed, I now approach your lotus feet for shelter, the same lotus feet that dispel all fear of worldly existence for those who have surrendered to them. Enough! Enough with hankering for sense enjoyment, which makes me identify with this mortal body and think of you, the Supreme, as my child. Indeed, while still in the maternity room, you told us that you, the unborn Lord, had already been born several times as our son in previous ages. After manifesting each of these transcendental bodies to protect your own principles of religion, you then made them unmanifest, thus appearing and disappearing like a cloud. O supremely glorified, all-pervading Lord, who can understand the mystic, deluding potency of your opulent expansions? Shukadeva Goswami said, having heard his father's words, the Supreme Lord, leader of the Satvatas, replied in a gentle voice as he bowed his head in humility and smiled. The Supreme Lord said, my dear father, I consider your statements appropriate, since you have explained the various categories of existence by referring to us, your sons. Not only I, but also you, along with my respected brother and these residents of Dwaraka, should all be considered in this same philosophical light, O best of the Yadus. Indeed, we should include all that exists, both moving and non-moving. The Supreme Spirit, Paramatma, is indeed one. He is self-luminous and eternal, transcendental and devoid of material qualities. But through the agency of the very modes he has created, the one supreme truth manifests as many among the expansions of these modes. The elements of ether, air, fire, water, and earth become visible, invisible, minute, or extensive as they manifest in various objects. Similarly, the Paramatma, the One, appears to be many. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, hearing these instructions spoken to him by the Supreme Lord, Vasudeva became freed from all ideas of duality. Satisfied at heart, he remained silent. At that time, the universally worshipped Devaki took the opportunity to address her two sons, Krishna and Balaram. Previously, she had heard with astonishment that they had brought their spiritual master's son back from death. Now, thinking of her own sons who had been murdered by Kamsa, she felt great sorrow, and thus with tear-filled eyes she beseeched Krishna and Balaram. Sri Devaki said, O Rama, Rama, immeasurable supreme soul, O Krishna, Lord of all masters of yoga, I know that you are the ultimate rulers of all universal creators, the primeval personalities of Godhead. Taking birth from me, you have now descended to this world in order to kill those kings whose good qualities have been destroyed by the present age, and who thus defy the authority of revealed scriptures and burden the earth. O soul of all that be, the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe are all carried out by a fraction of an expansion of an expansion of your expansion. Today I have come to take shelter of you, the Supreme Lord. It is said that when your spiritual master ordered you to retrieve his long-dead son, you brought him back from the forefathers' abode as a token of remuneration for your Guru's mercy. Please fulfill my desire in the same way, O Supreme Masters of all Yoga Masters. Please bring back my sons who were killed by the King of Bhoja, so that I may see them once again. Shukadeva Goswami said, Thus entreated by their mother, Balaram and Krishna employed their mystic Yogamaya potency and entered the region of Sutala. When the king of the Daityas, Bali Maharaj, noticed the arrival of the two lords, his heart overflowed with joy, since he knew them to be the supreme soul and worshipable deity of the entire universe, and especially of himself. He immediately stood up and then bowed down to offer respects, along with his entire entourage. Bali took pleasure in offering them elevated seats. After they sat down, he washed the feet of the two supreme personalities. Then he took that water, which purifies the whole world, even up to Lord Brahma, and poured it upon himself and his followers. He worshipped them with all the riches at his disposal. Priceless clothing, ornaments, fragrant sandalwood paste, betel nut, lamps, sumptuous food, and so on. Thus he offered them all his family's wealth, and also his own self. Taking hold of the Lord's lotus feet again and again, Bali, the conqueror of Indra's army, spoke from his heart, which was melting out of his intense love. As tears of ecstasy filled his eyes and the hair on his limbs stood on end, he began to speak with faltering words. Obeisances to the unlimited Lord Ananta, the greatest of all beings, and obeisances to Lord Krishna, the creator of the universe, who appears as the impersonal absolute and the supersoul in order to disseminate the principles of Sankhya and Yoga. Seeing you, lords, is a rare achievement for most living beings, but even persons like us, situated in the modes of passion and ignorance, can easily see you when you reveal yourself by your own sweet will. Many who had been constantly absorbed in enmity toward you ultimately became attracted to you, who are the direct embodiment of transcendental goodness and whose divine form comprises the revealed scriptures. These reformed enemies include Daityas, Danavas, Gandharvas, Siddhas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, Yakshas, Rakshasas, Pishachas, Bhutas, Pramatas, and Nayakas, and also ourselves and many others like us. Some of us have become attracted to you because of exceptional hatred, while others have become attracted because of their mood of devotion based on lust. But the demigods and others infatuated by material goodness feel no such attraction for you. What to speak of ourselves, O Lord of all perfect yogis? Even the greatest mystics do not know what your spiritual power of delusion is or how it acts. Please be merciful to me so I may get out of the blind well of family life, my false home, and find the true shelter of your lotus feet, which selfless sages always seek. Then, either alone or in the company of great saints, who are the friends of everyone, I may wander freely, finding life's necessities at the feet of the universally charitable trees. O Lord of all subordinate creatures, please tell us what to do and thus free us of all sin. One who faithfully executes your command, O Master, is no longer obliged to follow the ordinary Vedic rites. The Supreme Lord said, during the age of the first Manu, the sage Marichi had 6 sons by his wife Urna. They were all exalted demigods, but once they laughed at Lord Brahma when they saw him preparing to have sex with his own daughter. Because of that improper act, they immediately entered a demoniac form of life, and thus they took birth as sons of Hiranyakashipu. The goddess Yogamaya then took them away from Hiranyakashipu, and they were born again from Devaki's womb. After this, O king, Kamsa murdered them. Devaki still laments for them, thinking of them as her sons. These same sons of Marichi are now living here with you. We wish to take them from this place to dispel their mother's sorrow. Then, released from their curse and free from all suffering, they will return to their home in heaven. By my grace, these 6, Smara, Udgita, Parisranga, Patanga, Shuddhabrit, and Grini, will return to the abode of pure saints. After saying this, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, having been duly worshipped by Bali Maharaj, took the 6 sons and returned to Dwaraka, where they presented them to their mother. When she saw her lost children, Goddess Devaki felt such affection for them that milk flowed from her breasts. She embraced them and took them onto her lap, smelling their heads again and again. Lovingly, she let her sons drink from her breast, which became wet with milk just by their touch. She was entranced by the same illusory energy of Lord Vishnu that initiates the creation of the universe. By drinking her nectarian milk, the remnants of what Krishna himself had previously drunk, the 6 sons touched the transcendental body of the Lord, Narayan, and this contact awakened them to their original identities. They bowed down to Govinda, Devaki, their father, and Balaram, and then, as everyone looked on, they left for the abode of the demigods. Seeing her sons return from death and then depart again, saintly Devaki was struck with wonder, O king. She concluded that this was all simply an illusion created by Krishna. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Soul, the Lord of unlimited valor, performed countless pastimes just as amazing as this one, O descendant of Bharat. Sri Suta Goswami said, this pastime enacted by Lord Murari, whose fame is eternal, totally destroys the sins of the universe and serves as the transcendental ornament for his devotees' ears. Anyone who carefully hears or narrates this pastime, as recounted by the venerable son of Vyas, will be able to fix his mind in meditation on the Supreme Lord and attain to the all-auspicious kingdom of God. Chapter 86. Arjuna kidnaps Subhadra and Krishna blesses his devotees. King Parikshit said, O Brahman, we would like to learn how Arjuna married Lord Balaram's and Lord Krishna's sister, who was my grandmother. Shukadeva Goswami said, while traveling far and wide visiting various holy places of pilgrimage, Arjuna came to Prabhas. There he heard that Lord Balaram intended to give his maternal cousin Subhadra to Duryodhana in marriage, and that no one else approved of this plan. Arjuna wanted to marry her himself, so he disguised himself as a renunciant, complete with triple staff, and went to Dwaraka. He stayed there during the monsoon months to fulfill his purpose. Lord Balaram and the other residents of the city, not recognizing him, offered him all honor and hospitality. One day, Lord Balaram brought him to his home as his invited dinner guest, and Arjuna ate the food the Lord respectfully offered him. There he saw the wonderful maiden Subhadra, who was enchanting to heroes. His eyes opened wide with delight, and his mind became agitated and absorbed in thoughts of her. Arjuna was very attractive to women, and as soon as Subhadra saw him, she wanted to have him as her husband. Smiling bashfully with sidelong glances, she fixed her heart and eyes upon him. Meditating only on her and waiting for the opportunity to take her away, Arjuna had no peace. His heart trembled with passionate desire. Once, on the occasion of a great temple festival in honor of the Supreme Lord, Subhadra rode out of the fortress-like palace on a chariot. and at that time the mighty chariot warrior Arjuna took the opportunity to kidnap her. Subhadra's parents and Krishna had sanctioned this. Standing on his chariot, Arjuna took up his bow and drove off the valiant fighters and palace guards who tried to block his way. As her relatives shouted in anger, he took Subhadra away just as a lion takes his prey from the midst of lesser animals. When he heard of Subhadra's kidnapping, Lord Balaram became as disturbed as the ocean during the full moon. But Lord Krishna respectfully took hold of his feet and, together with other family members, pacified him by explaining the matter. Lord Balaram then happily sent the bride and groom very valuable wedding gifts consisting of elephants, chariots, horses, and male and female servants.